Blog Talk Radio.
Coming live from Pittsburgh.
MLB fans, my name is Benson Fechter, and I'll be your host today. If you're listening live, it is Wednesday, July 27th, 2016. We have a very exciting lineup set up for you, and without further ado, let's get right into the baseball, talking about one of the bigger topics over the past couple of months, not months, weeks in baseball. And the question is, what would it take to trade for Chris Sale? And it's a big question. And Chicago White Sox general manager Rick Hahn, he publicly stated last week that he will listen to offers for any player on his roster, including American League Cy Young Award frontrunner Chris Sale, who is also tied for the Major League lead with 14 wins and has a 3.18 ERA and 1.01 WHIP. Just 27 years old, he signed to a club-friendly contract and is under team control through 2019. And this is a bit strange because the White Sox, they are in contention. And for Rick Hahn to come out and publicly state that anybody on his roster he's going to listen to. And I don't mind him, you know, listening to offers, seeing what he's going to get for them. But to publicly come out and state that he will be listening to offers for all his players, including the amazing talent in Chris Sale, it just goes to show that maybe Chris Sale might be gone, and this has been the big talk over the last couple of days and weeks. And the fact that he is also 27 years old, and the fact that he is also through team control through 2019, and the White Sox are still in contention, it's just a little bit strange that all of this would happen, because I believe the White Sox, they could be a good team. They have a good pitching staff. Their lineup, when it's on, it can be great. So they proved that at the beginning of the year, too. The fact that they could possibly trade Chris Sale is not coming out of nowhere, but it is a little bit coming out, don't know how to explain this, but a little bit out of nowhere, you could say. And I think it's really rare that the teams listen to offers for a number one starter in the first place. And much less one who is still in his prime and is Cy Young worthy. But the White Sox are definitely listening, and I thought it would be a fun exercise to see what they would be asking for in exchange for the ace. Remember, these are not the deals I think will happen. I just present them to lay out the asking price, what type of package the White Sox would expect in return from five teams. Can't do all three. The Red Sox, the Rangers, the Nationals, the Cubs, and the Dodgers. And these five teams could definitely be interested in this lanky lefty, Chris Sale. And I think this has been sort of a coming up. Because if you remember, in spring training, Adam LaRoche, he retired because his son was not allowed to be in the clubhouse. They said they weren't going to make it a daycare. Chris Sale, he had an uprise about that. He did not like it. Him and the management, they don't get along. Then you have this whole jersey thing go down. And you just think, is Chris Sale a problem in the clubhouse? And if he is, I can see why they'd trade him for better talent in return. It's definitely a good possibility, and I'm all in favor of it. And the first team that we're going to examine that could possibly trade for Chris Sale is the Boston Red Sox. And the White Sox, they would have to start the conversation by asking for somebody like Mookie Betts or Xander Bogaerts off the Major League club. And after the Red Sox decline that, which they obviously will, the White Sox would then insist that top prospect Yoan Moncada headline the deal. If Boston refused to include him, the conversation would end. That simple. The White Sox, if Chris Sale goes to the Red Sox, which that would be an extremely good rotation if that happens, they would definitely have to get either Mookie Betts, Xander Bogaerts, or Yoan Moncada. If none of that happened, then it's over. The Red Sox don't get Chris Sale. And Mookie Betts, he's a young outfielder. He's having a breakout year. And I think that he would fit well in the White Sox if they had him. The outfield is nicer now. Adam Eaton, Melky Cabrera, he can fit right there in the outfield. Be Eaton, Cabrera, Fett would be a nice outfield. Now, I don't think they would go after Xander Bogaerts because of top prospect Tim Anderson. They would probably ask about Bogaerts, and I'm sure they would love having Bogaerts on the team. And obviously, Tim Anderson, he could go around, play third, play second possibly. But Tim Anderson, I think, is the shortstop of the future. So the most likely out of Mookie Betts and Xander Bogaerts, to me, is going to be Mookie Betts. And then you have Yoan Moncada. And the Red Sox will most likely decline Mookie Betts and Xander Bogaerts because they are the young talent of our game and could be up-and-coming superstars. And they pretty much are right now. And Yoan Moncada is definitely a top prospect. And he would have to headline the deal if Mookie Betts and Xander Bogaerts didn't. And it's not just going to be a straight Chris Sale, Yoan Moncada deal. And if the Red Sox are game and they do put Yoan Moncada in there, the next piece, I think, would be Michael Kopech, who is our top pitching prospect. He was actually clocked at 105 miles per hour a few weeks ago. So that would be piece number two. The White Sox, I think, would then ask for outfielder Andrew Benintendi and catcher, and also an outfielder, Blake Swihart. But the Red Sox would counter that they couldn't put both Benintendi and Moncada in the deal, I think. The two sides would probably look for a fourth player, and they'd settle on left-handed starter Eduardo Rodriguez. So here's the thing. Mookie Betts, Xander Bogaerts, White Sox would love one of those two, but I just don't think the Red Sox would bite on that. Yoan Moncada is really the, I think he'd headline the deal. And Michael Kopech, definitely a special prospect, 105 miles per hour as a prospect. He is definitely young, and he definitely has a firearm. I'm telling you, I do not know much about his off-speed or changeup and all that, but if he does have a good one, he could definitely be really good. And we'll be seeing the next Aroldis Chapman coming up. I don't think we're going to be seeing a starter throw 105 miles per hour, but wouldn't that be special at the back end of the bullpen for the White Sox? Michael Kopech in the future. So here's what I think it would go. Yoan Moncada, Michael Kopech, and then Benintendi or Swihart. They're not going to put both in there because both are definitely great prospects. Benintendi is great, but I think the White Sox and the Red Sox will agree Blake Swihart is who they want. Because Blake Swihart, he has more versatility, and I think Andrew Benintendi has more upside than Blake Swihart. So the Red Sox will agree to hold on to him, and the White Sox will happily have taken Blake Swihart. And after I think the Red Sox would decline to put Benintendi and Swihart in there. So I think Eduardo Rodriguez would be a good left-hander for that rotation. Quality left-hander for a Cy Young left-hander, but still they're getting major league pitching back that's also left-hander. So they may be losing their Cy Young caliber player, but if it's for chemistry and if the White Sox there is problems in the clubhouse with Chris Sale, then Eduardo Rodriguez might just come in there and it might work well for him. He might excel to places we haven't seen before. So here's what I think the trade would be for the Red Sox. Going to the Red Sox would be Chris Sale for Yoan Moncada, Michael Kopech, Blake Swihart, and Eduardo Rodriguez. I think that would be a strong return if the White Sox wanted to blow everything up and rebuild for the future. Now, if they made this trade, I don't think it would necessarily be blown up. I think it would just be like cutting them up. This is an atom bomb. It's just little scissors going through, right? They still are in contention. They're hovering around the 500 mark, and we've seen what they were capable of doing earlier in the season. So that's definitely still a possibility. And Eduardo Rodriguez is going to be able to help right now. Yoan Moncada is one of the best prospects in baseball. Michael Kopech could be a back-end closer or one of the best stars we've seen in a while soon. Blake Swihart is right there. He can play catcher and outfielder. Nice versatility. And you get that. So I don't think the White Sox are going to get Mookie Betts or Xander Bogaerts. They love one of them. But most likely deal, Sale for Moncada, Kopech, Swihart, and Rodriguez. That's where I see going down, in my opinion. Okay, so let's move into our second team that we are now going to be talking about. And that is number two, the Texas Rangers. And For them to get Chris Sale, I think they would have to start with Nomar Mazara and second baseman Jerickson Profar. And the White Sox likely would ask for power hitter Joey Gallo as the third player in the transaction. The Rangers would tell the White Sox if the deal was built around Mazara, they wouldn't give up both Profar and Gallo, but they'd give up one of the two. That's half the package. So I think if Chris Sale is going to be going to the Rangers, I think Nomar Mazara, he's definitely gone. Now, then you have to decide between Jerickson Profar and Joey Gallo. Now, if I was the Rangers, I'd probably choose Jerickson Profar. He's only come on this year, and Joey Gallo, in the times he has been in the big leagues, he has struggled. He strikes out a lot, definitely has huge power, definitely a power hitter. But I think Profar would be better suited as a White Sox. Tim Anderson, Jerickson Profar, they could be a good double play partners, and probably work out well too. Also, great outfield. Cabrera, Eaton, and Mazara. Nomar Mazara, he's been great this year. Jerickson Profar, great this year. I think the White Sox should go after Profar. I think the Rangers would prefer Profar, actually, because they're not giving up on Joey Gallo. And if I was Rick Hahn, I'd definitely go after Profar before Gallo. And I think after that, the White Sox, they wouldn't just settle on Nomar Mazara and Profar. They would then need two pitchers back and would ask for probably Dylan Tate and Luis Ortiz. Tate right now is having a down year and his velocity has dropped. So it would be somewhat of a gamble, but that's something the Rangers could agree to. And Dylan Tate and Luis Ortiz, I think they're easily let go by the Rangers. They will be thrown into that trade and easily. Dylan Tate, he was a great prospect, but the fact that he's having a down year, his velocity has dropped. We don't know if it's going to keep dropping. We don't know if surgery is necessary or any of that yet. But so it's going to be a gamble. And that's what it all is right now. And if the White Sox plan to cut it up, like I think they will, then Dylan Tate will be a perfect piece in that. He could be a nice gamble. They could put him pop. If they do blow everything up, Dylan Tate would be in the rotation next year because they want to see how he does. Luis Ortiz, he's a solid prospect too, so he'll throw in there too. So here's a trade. Chris Sale for Mazara, Profar, or Gallo, and Tate and Ortiz. This deal, I think, would be a good haul for the White Sox. It would solve second base and right field long term, which is good. The Rangers would have a dominant rotation that includes Cole Hamels, Yu Darvish, and Chris Sale. That would be a dangerous team. And I think if this does happen, we could maybe see a Rangers-Cubs World Series. That would be pretty fun, wouldn't it? Seeing Cole Hamels face Jake Arrieta. Next day, you see John Lackey and Yu Darvish, and you see Kyle Hendricks and Chris Sale. Definitely be an interesting series if that goes down. Let's move to our third team on the list, and that is the Washington Nationals. And I think if they're going to get Chris Sale, the conversation would begin with the White Sox absolutely demanding Lucas Giolito be included, at which time the Nationals will explain that a more involving their top young pitcher prospect would be somewhat counterproductive for them. That they're looking to build a rotation that includes four aces, or potential aces, and Sale, Max Scherzer, Steven Strasburg, and Giolito. Alrighty then, the White Sox would say. Then what about starter Joe Ross? He could be dealt with pitching prospects Eric Fetty and Reynaldo Lopez, and infielder Trey Turner. Now, I think that's probably what's going to go down. Lucas Giolito is not going to be a White Sox. I guess that's what you say, White Sox. I don't know what the plural of it is. And then that would be a pretty good rotation. You get Sale, Scherzer, Strasburg, and then Giolito, roll of the dice. He could be a potential ace. And that would be a scary rotation, too. You could probably see a Nationals-Cubs. That would be a great series in the playoffs. And that probably will happen if Sale does go to the Nationals. It will happen one way or the other. And that would be absolute pitching duels night in and night out. It would be a great series for everybody to watch. And you know what? I think Joe Ross would be a good fit in Chicago, too. I mean, he can plug right into that rotation right away. He'll be expected to do a lot, and that's fine because he's not expected to do a lot in Washington, but he could rise up for the occasion. They just need to roll the dice on him there. And then Eric Fetty, Reynaldo Lopez, they are solid pitching prospects. And then Trey Turner, I think, would be great there too. And I think, though, the Nationals, they wouldn't allow themselves to lose three starters. So they probably insist the White Sox take either Fetty or Lopez, not both. And the fourth could be a reliever, maybe Cota Glover. That might get it done, right? And I think that would make most sense because they're not going to let up Eric Fetty and Ronaldo Lopez. So just pick one of those two, flip a coin, practically the same thing. Cota Glover, that would definitely get it done. And the trade would end up being Sale for Joe Ross, Trey Turner, Fetty or Lopez, and Glover. I think the trade would definitely give the Nationals the NL's most dominant rotation. While the White Sox would have added rotation depth, a solid reliever, and a significant table setter in turn, who would form a solid double play combination with rookie shortstop Tim Anderson. All right, we have to take a quick break on Inside MLB. When we come back, we're going to be going into the fourth and fifth teams, the Cubs and Dodgers. How will they scrape Chris Sale from the White Sox? That's next.
And you would be my queen. For nothing could keep us together, but we could be down forever and ever.
We are back on Inside MLB talking about Chris Sale and what it's going to take for five teams to scrape him from the White Sox. And we already have talked about three teams so far. We've talked about the Red Sox, and I think the trade would be Sale for Moncada, Kopech, Swihart, and Rodriguez. I think that would be a strong return if the White Sox wanted to blow it up and rebuild for the future. Then we move to the Rangers, and I proposed Sale for Mazzara, Profar, or Gallo, Tate, and Ortiz. This deal would be a good haul for the White Sox and would solve second base and right field long term. And the Rangers would have a dominant rotation that includes Cole Hamels, Yu Darvish, and Chris Sale. And most recently, we talked about how he would go to the Nationals. And the trade would be Sale for Joe Ross, Trey Turner, Fedyar Lopez, and Glover. The trade would give the Nationals the NL's most dominant rotation, while the White Sox would have added rotation depth, a solid reliever, and a significant table setter in turn, who would form a solid double play combination with rookie shortstop Tim Anderson. Now, the fourth team that we're going to be talking about is the Cubs. And the Cubs just acquired Bo Bichette, so why not make him a sale too? They could start the conversation by centering a package around left fielder Kyle Schwarber, who has a middle of the lineup potential. Schwarber has been off limits in all traded conversations so far, but he wouldn't be off limits in a sale deal. The White Sox would also insist on getting his starting pitching back, with the underrated Kyle Hendricks being the one they want. And yes, the Cubs just acquired Walter Chapman, so you're thinking, do they have the prospects to make this happen? Well, I think Kyle Schwarber could definitely go to the White Sox if they're offering Chris Sale. Just take the bus across town. And I think Chris Sale, if he's on the White Sox, would just make this team unbelievably good. And the Cubs have the depth to replace Kyle Schwarber, and you don't know how his game is going to be when he comes off injury. We've seen Chris Sale, and you know you're going to have him until 2019. So I would definitely not keep Kyle Schwarber off limits if he is a part of that deal. And then you have Kyle Hendricks also in the mix there. And I think he's underrated, but he's definitely been very good this season. And if the White Sox are going to trade Sale, they're going to need pitching back as well. And I think Kyle Hendricks would be the optimal pitcher in that situation. So you get Chris Sale right now for Kyle Schwarber and Kyle Hendricks. I think after that, then the White Sox would probably insist on getting second baseman prospect Ian Happ. And while the Cubs wouldn't like the sound of that, they'd realize that Javier Baez is a long-term solution at second base anyway. The final piece would probably be difficult, with the White Sox insisting on out their Eloy Jimenez, and the Cubs instead offering third baseman Jeimer Candelario. Now, Ian Happ, he went to Mount Lebanon High School, which is in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, my hometown. So I don't really like seeing Ian Happ on the Cubs, since I don't particularly like the Cubs anyway. But I don't mind the White Sox. So Ian Happ, if he goes there, that's just fine too. And I think the Cubs, they know they have Javier Baez, versatile, great glove. He has a great bat too. He just needs to stop being so free swinging. And I think the White Sox would be happy to have Ian Happ. They would have a future of Happ and Anderson as a double play partner. And Eloy Jimenez, they need a future in right field. And I think that's where the White Sox are going to go. But the Cubs are probably going to offer Jeimer Candelario. The White Sox, they do have Todd Frazier, but Jeimer is still a little bit of a ways off. So I think the trade would end up being Sale for Schwarber, Hendricks, Happ, and Candelario. This is a strong haul for the White Sox. But honestly, could you imagine a Cubs rotation including Sale, Jake Arrieta, and John Lester with Hector Rondon and Chapman in the back end of the bullpen? Remember, the Cubs would control Sale at affordable rates for three more years after this one. Our fifth team, the Los Angeles Dodgers. And the Dodgers, they've been collecting assets since team president Andrew Friedman and Farm Society arrived 2 years ago. Now it's time for them to turn these assets into championship caliber players in their prime. And Chris Sale fits that model perfectly. And Andrew Friedman, he was on the Rays, so he knows how to get those nice prospects for pitchers and find the guys. I mean, he's sort of the sabermetrics kind of guy. But sometimes you have to use the assets for the future, and you have to put those assets into now. And that's what Friedman and Zaudi need to do. And if they get Chris Sale, this rotation will definitely be extremely good. And really, let's make this clear. The Dodgers aren't getting the Sale without parting with young lefty starter Julio Urias. If they won't, the deal is dead. Plain and simple. If they will, then it's a matter of deciding who will go with him. Pitcher prospect Jose De Leon would be the next name included, and the third would be Yasiel Puig, as the Dodgers would move in a different direction, and the White Sox would hope the influence of first baseman Jose Abreu will get the talented Puig to make adjustments. And the Dodgers, they have been extremely protective of Julio Urias, and I think Chris Sale might just take Urias to the White Sox. And they've also been extremely protective of Jose De Leon. So I think this is going to be probably the hardest team to get Chris Sale, because they really like Urias. They really like De Leon. And Puig, they're willing to let go. So that's an expendable piece. And I think the trade ended up being Sale for Urias, De Leon, and Puig. That would give the Dodgers the dreaded 1-2 punch of Clayton Kershaw and Sale going forward. In fact, if Kershaw, who is a back injury right now, is able to return to form this season, the Dodgers would have a legitimate chance of running the table in October and maybe finally win their first World Series since 1988. So let's go over all the trades just to recap. So for the Red Sox, I think it would be Sale for Moncada, Kopech, Swihart, and Rodriguez. For the Rangers, I think it would be Sale for Mazzara, Profar, or Gallo. I'd pick Profar, Tate, and Ortiz. For the Nationals, it would be Sale for Joe Ross, Trey Turner, Fedeir Lopez, flip a coin, and Gloover. For the Cubs, I think it would be a Sale for Schwarber, Hendricks, Happ, and Candelario. And for the Dodgers, it would be a Sale for Urias, De Leon, and Puig. So now it's up to you. What team do you think Chris Sale will end up being on? The Red Sox, the Rangers, the Nationals, the Cubs, or the Dodgers with my proposed trades. And if you have any other comments, just please feel free to shoot them out. All right, now we are also going to stay on the Dodgers talk, and we're going to be talking about right fielder that we just talked about, actually, Yasiel Puig, and how he will be subject to fine if he wears customized spikes again. And it was really bad news all around yesterday, for Dodgers outfielder Yasiel Puig, who continues to be kept out of the lineup with hamstring discomfort. It was informed his eye-catching custom spikes are no longer allowed by Major League Baseball. And, yes, it was bad news. And He is trying to get the hamstring better, and the hamstring is a tough injury to come back from. Those leg muscles, the hamstring, the quad, ACL, everything in there, it's hard to come back from, and it just stays tight. It's one of the lingering injuries. And the fact that that's there, and now Major League Baseball is allowing to wear him his own spikes. Now, they are eye-catching, and maybe Major League Baseball may say, you know, it's distracting, but I don't think it's distracting. It makes baseball fun. I mean, if you're going to watch a Dodgers game, it might be interesting to see what cleats Yasiel Puig puts on every night. I mean, he's wearing new spikes every game, customized to his liking, and Major League Baseball is taking that away. I think the players union might think something about this, but I don't see what Rob Manfred is trying to do here. We're trying to make baseball a fun sport. It's supposed to be entertainment. It is entertainment. They're being paid to entertain us, and the spikes were entertainment. And Los Angeles is the center of entertainment in the world. What better place for Yasiel Puig to do that in? But Rob Manfred will not be allowing him to do that now. And Puig actually received a letter from MLB stating that he'll be subject to a fine if he wears customized Nike shoes on the field again. The Orange County Register reported the fine could be as much as $5,000 for a violation. So pretty much what they're saying is you're not allowed to customize your Nike shoes. Just get the plain black and white version of whatever you want. So whatever they make that's not customized, you can have. I mean, I assume he'll be able to have 66 or Puig on the cleats, but definitely not what he's been doing because it's been flashy. It's been exciting. I've liked seeing the cleats that he has. We'll go into what he was wearing. And I think $5,000, I mean, to them, it's like out of pocket. Pocket cash, right? So he might continue to do it just to, you know, spite Major League Baseball. I wouldn't be surprised if he did that. I mean, he's been a show his whole career. And I think Yasiel Puig might actually do that, just customize his own Nike shoes, wear them. But will Nike hold out on making the shoes? I doubt that, but it definitely is a possibility. Now let's go into what shoes Puig was wearing. And Puig first wore shoes with an American flag theme on the 4th of July, and later wore shoes designed by a local artist with a Cuban flag theme. So, you know, he was supporting the United States of America, not initially from the United States, initially from Cuba on the 4th of July. And the fact that Rob Manfred is upset about this and will be fining him $5,000 every time he wears something like this, it's a little bit embarrassing. I mean, he's trying to support not even his own country, and the fact that he's going to be fined for doing that, I think, is a disgrace. And I get that, you know, that was on the 4th of July, so it might have been let go. And then he wore actually two cleats in one game. He wore the American flag one, and he wore a Cuban flag one. So, you know, after his at-bat, he went into the clubhouse, took his American spikes off and put on his Cuban spikes, and he paid a local artist to design them. And I don't think Rob Manfred should get back about this either. I mean, players are allowed to wear arm sleeves and everything that could say Cuba on them. And, you know, why isn't he allowed to wear spikes that have a Cuban flag on them? It just doesn't make sense to me. He's supporting his home country. You know, people back home are watching this superstar play. And the fact that Rob Manfred's not going to allow this to continue, I think, is also a bit of a disgrace. And the shoes, those weren't really the bad ones, right? These ones were the ones that seemed to catch league's eye, though. They were a tribute to retiring Dodgers broadcaster Ben Scully, worn for one game during the opening series of the second half in Arizona. One shoe read, win for Ben, complete with a superimposed image of Scully's face on the side. The other shoe read, hashtag ITFDB, a reference to Scully's famous tagline to start games, it's time for Dodger baseball. And I don't think this is bad. He's just paying a tribute to the announcer that's been so good for Major League Baseball for so long. And Ben Scully, he got a kick out of it too. So Rob Manfred's not allowing one of the best broadcasters baseball has ever seen to, you know, have a little bit of fun in the booth. And he's not allowing the Yasiel Puig to pay tribute to him, who has been announcing him his whole Dodger career. And I don't mind win for Ben. I mean, his face is on the side. That's not distracting anybody. It's on his feet. It's not like when the pitchers are pitching, they're going to be looking at spikes thinking, when I read win for Ben, I'm distracted. I can't throw strikes. That's not how it goes. And For his other shoe being hashtag ITFDB, that's not going to distract anybody either. I mean, I don't see what's the problem with having Vin Scully's face and some slogans that Vin Scully has on the cleats. It's just not a problem for me. And Puig, what he had promised more eye-catching shoes on the current homestand, but it is uncertain whether those shoes will be seen in games now. One pair in his locker was Statue of Liberty themed, and another pair had a large 66 Puig's uniform number emblazoned on the side, and I hope he does wear them, despite Major League Baseball, and wear his Statue of Liberty theme. And if Rob Manfred is going to fine somebody $5,000 for supporting the country and supporting the immigrants that came over by wearing a Statue of Liberty themed shoes, it shouldn't happen. And 66, it's more of a little bit of self-indulgence, but it'll be fun to see. And there was a little chance he'd be fined for any kind of footwear Tuesday because he was out of the starting lineup for the fourth consecutive game, a 3-2 win of the Tampa Bay Rays, after tweaking his right hamstring running down the first baseline Thursday at Washington. I think what would be really surprising is if Major League Baseball fined Yasiel Puig for wearing spikes in the dugout. And there was a chance he could have been fined yesterday. He still might be fined, but I highly doubt that will happen. What Dodgers manager Dave Roberts suggested this past weekend was that Puig might have to go on the disabled list if he were unable to play yesterday. The club will wait one more day today before making a decision. Puig was available to pinch hit yesterday, Roberts said. And if Puig went out there pinch hitting with his cleats on, I definitely think he would have been fined. But since he didn't even play, they better not fine him. So, other than his hamstring injury, Puig, who bats right-handed, also could have been out of the lineup Tuesday because the Dodgers were facing right-hander Chris Archer. The Rays have left-hander Matt Moore scheduled to pitch later this afternoon. All right, we have to take a quick break on Inside MLB. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the Toronto Blue Jays acquiring Melvin Upton Jr. from the Padres. That's next. Inside MLB, we just finished up the talk about Yasiel Puig and his fancy spikes and how he'll be fined $5,000 every time he wears them on the field. Will he or will he not protest against Major League Baseball and wear them? He's also been injured, so that could hinder the chances of the Dodgers getting Chris Sale. Earlier in the show, we talked about the possibility of five teams getting him and what it would take: the Red Sox, Rangers, Nationals, Cubs, and the aforementioned Dodgers. And go rewind or whatever you want to do to listen to that again if you want to do that. Now it's time to talk about the Blue Jays and how they acquired outfielder Melvin Upton Jr. from the Padres. And as we all probably know by now, the Toronto Blue Jays acquired outfielder Melvin Upton Jr. and cash from the San Diego Padres from minor league pitcher Hansel Rodriguez. Now, Melvin Upton Jr. is not really known for Melvin Upton. He's known to be BJ Upton, but he sort of switched his name last year to his official name. His real name is not BJ. His real name is Melvin Upton Jr. So he changed his name. So that's all cleared. It's really BJ Upton. If you know him by that, that's Melvin Upton Jr. And they also got cash, which is important because he does have a relatively large contract. So the Padres are pretty much just giving him to the Blue Jays. But they also got Hansel Rodriguez in return, who is a quality minor league pitcher. Upton will be making $15.45 million this season and $16.45 million next season, the final year of a five-year deal he signed with the Atlanta Braves before the 2013 season. The Padres will pay all but $5 million of what is owed to Upton, according to MLB Network and confirmed by ESPN. So the Blue Jays are going to be eating most of the contract. They are going to be paying him $10.45 million this year and $11.45 million next year. So, I mean, if the Blue Jays think he's going to be a help, I think he will be a help, then pay him $10 million and $11 million over next year if he's of somewhere to the team, and I think he will be. Upton right now, he's still relatively young, 31 years old. He is in the midst of a bounce-back season after playing only 87 games last season. He's a 12-year veteran, batting .256 with 16 home runs, 45 RBIs, and a team-leading 20 stolen bases. Upton figures to provide outfield depth and versatility to the Blue Jays, who trail the first-place Baltimore Orioles by 3 games in the American League East. Upton, the fact that he is still 31 years old does help, and he's bouncing back with a nice season. His average isn't where the Blue Jays want it to be, but the Blue Jays are not an average team. They're a home run and RBI team, and he has plenty of those. 16 home runs, 45 RBIs. He can run a little bit too, which will definitely help. That's probably not going to be the case over the next years. He is 31 years old, and whenever he's over 30 in baseball, then that can obviously affect your speed. And I think Upton, pretty much he's going to be there for outfield depth and versatility. He can play all 3 outfield positions, give guys days off. He can start regularly if he does a little bit better. And the Orioles are a great team right now, leading the American League East. And pretty much Melvin Upton is here to do one thing, help the Blue Jays catch the Orioles. And this is going to be an interesting American League East finish. Orioles, Blue Jays. Blue Jays are 3 games back. It'll be definitely interesting to see who wins the East. And I think whoever doesn't win the East will definitely have a wild card spot, at least. Upton, he couldn't join Blue Jays general manager Ross Atkins for an early afternoon news conference because he was at the nearest border crossing in Buffalo, New York, before being cleared to enter Canada. And remember, if you're a player traded to the Blue Jays, you have to, you know, be cleared to get into Canada. Re-enter Canada, because the Blue Jays and the Padres were actually playing each other, and Upton, what he wanted to do, go to Buffalo, because he didn't like Toronto, I guess, and so he had to be cleared to re-enter, and so that's the reason they couldn't have a press conference. When he arrived at the Padres on Sunday night, Upton was treated as a visitor. As a member of the Blue Jays, he requires a work visa to enter Canada, so he had to get all that. That's kind of strange because they're already in Toronto. And I think what attracted the Blue Jays to him was several things, really. The defense at all 3 positions, I think the speed, base running, base dealer, power, versatility, and depth, so many things. So he can play left field, center field, right field. He has good speed. He knows how to run the bases. He can steal bases. He has power up in that bat. And he's versatile, again, play all 3 positions. And he can provide solid depth to the Blue Jays. And Padres manager A.J. Preller said the deal had been in the works for a few weeks. And, you know, Melvin Upton, he's played well. I think he's really played both sides of the ball. In my mind, he has a chance to be a 30-30 guy. He's hit some big home runs in some big spots and has played tremendous defense for us, for the Padres on that field. And, yes, definitely played well. Great on defense, great on offense. 30-30, if you don't know what that is, 30 home runs, 30 steals. He has 20 steals right now, 16 home runs. I think he will get to the 30-30 mark. And he's definitely hit some clutch home runs, and the Blue Jays need to be clutch right now. 3 games back to the Orioles, and they are fighting to get back into the number one spot. And play tremendous defense, so that's definitely going to help the Blue Jays a lot. Upton and closer Craig Kimbrell were obtained in a trade with Atlanta on the eve of opening day 2015. Upton missed a good deal last season with a foot injury. So, Craig Kimbrell, Upton, they're now gone. It's kind of funny. Last year, Upton was Brave. Then he was a Padre. Now he's a Blue Jay. Let's go on Kimbrell's path. Brave, Padre, Red Sox. So, both players were both Braves last year. They were both Padres last year. And now they're both on American League East teams. The Orioles, they were also reportedly had expressed interest in trading for Upton. And wouldn't that have been something if the Orioles stealed Melvin Upton Jr. from the Blue Jays? And that would just give them an extra boost towards winning the division as they already have a lead on the Blue Jays. So I was happy that he went to the Blue Jays rather than the Orioles because I want to see a race. And the Blue Jays now are proving that they're going all in on this race to win back-to-back American League East championships. Upton, as most people do, they took to Twitter on Tuesday to thank the Padres and their fans and to say he's excited to be joining the Blue Jays. Melvin Upton Jr. said, "Thank you to the Padres organization, fans, and teammates for all the support and the opportunity. I enjoyed everything about my time in San Diego. I'm excited to join my new Blue Jays teammates today and can't wait to help continue the winning tradition that's been built here." So, Melvin Upton Jr., I think, very respectful. Thanks to the Padres organization first for bringing him there. Thanks to fans for supporting him and the teammates. So, good statement there. And you just had to move across clubhouses because the Blue Jays and Padres are actually playing each other right now. And right now, the Blue Jays, they currently have all-star Michael Saunders in left field and slugger Jose Bautista in right field. Meaning Upton will probably have to compete with senator Kevin Pillar for playing time in Toronto. The Blue Jays also could play Edwin Encarnacion more regularly at first base, opening up more at-bats for designated hitter for Saunders, Bautista, and Upton. And when Melvin Upton Jr. went to the Blue Jays yesterday, it was a bit of a surprise because I didn't think they needed him. I didn't think they needed Tulowitzki last year. He helped out. I don't think they need Upton this year. He's probably going to help out. And I think Encarnacion needs to play first base because Saunders is an all-star. Bautista is great. Pillar, great defense. Same with Upton. So you want all four of their bats in the lineup. So Encarnacion, he can definitely play first base. Put him out there, and that will help. And Upton, he's actually the fourth prominent player traded away this season by the rebuilding Padres, who have also parted with James Shields, Drew Pomeranz, and Fernando Rodney. Rodriguez is a right-hander. He's 2-1 with a 3.06 ERA and 6 starts for rookie league Bluefield. And Hanser Rodriguez was the one that was sent back to the Padres. So definitely good. He's definitely a long way from the big leagues. So the Padres trying to rebuild. It's a perfect piece to get back. In a second deal on Tuesday night, the Blue Jays acquired Joaquin Benoit from the Seattle Mariners for fellow right-hander Drew Storen and cash in a swap of struggling relievers. So, Joaquin Benoit, I think that's a good deal. Drew Storen wasn't doing too well, struggling relievers, so both of them are struggling. They think Benoit will be better. The Mariners think Storen will be better. So, it'll be interesting to see how the respective ones do on their new teams. And they're pretty far away, Toronto, Seattle, all the way across the border. So definitely both guys had long journeys, but they now are where they are. And we'll see how Benoit does with the Blue Jays. We'll see how Upton Jr. does with the Blue Jays. But it'll definitely be an interesting rest of the season for the Blue Jays as they try to hunt down the Baltimore Orioles. That's next. We have to take a quick break on Inside MLB. When we come back, we're going to be talking about Aroldis Chapman of the Chicago Cubs now. And how he clarifies comments from a nervous presser. That's next.
If man is the father, the sun is the center of the earth, in the middle of the universe, then why is this verse coming 6 times rehearsed? Don't freestyle much, but I write them like such.
Word.
Amongst the fiends controlled by the screen, what does it all mean, all this shit I'm seeing? Human beings screaming vocal javelin, line of a local unraveling.
Uh-huh. We're back on Inside MLB, and we actually have one topic left. So, show's gone pretty fast. I all hope you enjoyed it. So, let's get into our final topic of the day, and that is Aroldis Chapman and how the new Cub clarifies comments from a nervous presser. When the Chicago Cubs acquired controversial flamethrowing reliever Aroldis Chapman from the New York Yankees on Monday, there were sure to be repercussions beyond any baseball-related debates. And, yes, Aroldis Chapman is controversial because of the domestic violence case, and he was suspended for the first month of the season. And it's tough for people to talk about domestic violence because it's just a tough topic to go to. And I don't really like crossing the line and going into all that, but that's why he has controversy with him. And the Cubs got him because he's a flamethrower. He can pitch ball over 100 miles per hour. And that's why there are going to be repercussions. There are repercussions. And this is beyond baseball. It goes into the domestic violence world and what's right and what's not right. And it's hard to get into again, like I said. And after issuing a written statement to the media through the Cubs upon being traded, Chapman was introduced to the local media Tuesday in a 20-minute news conference in the visiting dugout at U.S. Cellular Field. And it was a tough press conference for him, as I'll get to later. And he was speaking about 30 reporters and 6 television cameras through the Cubs' designated Spanish translator, Coach Henry Blanco. Chapman seemed to skirt around several questions about the domestic abuse incident, though after the 30-day suspension he served at the beginning of the season. And again, it's hard for him to talk about. It's hard for everybody to talk about. And he's obviously not going to get around domestic abuse. Everywhere he goes, it's going to be a question. Aroldis, what do you think about the domestic abuse thing? Have you overcome it? You know, that those kind of questions. And Chapman's going to need to address this head on. And he, you know, tiptoed around it yesterday. And it was just not a good press conference. And when asked what the Cubs asked him in regard to the off-field incident, Blanco translated for Chapman. They told him what they expected for him. Welcome him to the club, and he's going to be a part of the team. Hopefully a guy that helps us to the World Series. And this really, he didn't answer the question head on. They told him what they expected from him. Chapman didn't say what the expectations were. Obviously, the expectations are no domestic abuse in the future. And they welcome him to the club. He's going to be a part of the team, obvious, and hopefully he's a guy that helps us to the World Series. He could have made that up for all we know. And variations of the response were repeated a few times to a media group that grew more impatient as the conference progressed. And I think this was all about Chapman not answering the questions, the media not hearing what they want to hear, and Chapman not saying what they want to be said. And at one point, when asked about the precise substance of a conference call between the pitcher, agent Barry Praver, Cubs president of baseball operations Theo Epstein, and owner Tom Ricketts, Chapman paused for several seconds, and after offering a brief response in Spanish, Blanco translated. He was sleeping when they had a meeting with him on the phone, so he's trying to remember what he talked about. And that really had a little bit of people scratching their heads. Why was Aroldis Chapman sleeping in a conference call between important people? And you don't know if this is true, if this is not true, if he's just making up excuses not to talk about what actually happened. And after the news conference ended, Chapman actually participated in a one-on-one interview with ESPN's Pedro Gomez that was conducted all in Spanish. In that conversation, Chapman was more successful in offering answers to some of the same questions he had just been asked. So you wonder, is it a language barrier or something? Is Chapman not comfortable with English? And I think that New York, obviously there are a good amount of Spanish people that live there. Chicago, it's also a diverse neighborhood, so there are Spanish-speaking people there. But is he happy, and, you know, what's going to become of Chapman on the Cubs? And what Chapman said to Pedro Gomez was that when asked what – I knew no matter what I was traded to, this would resurface. The controversy is going to follow me. But I'm with my girlfriend. Our family's together. We're working toward making things better in our lives, and really it's going to be with me. And so he's more open to Gomez, and he probably didn't want to be traded because he knew this would have resurfaced, and he doesn't want the controversy to follow him, but it is going to follow him. And when asked what he has learned from the incident, Chapman told Gomez, I've grown tremendously from that time. I'm with my girlfriend still, with the family, and I feel that I've absolutely changed as a person. I'm working to be a better person. And now that I remember, because they just asked me in the previous press conference, what the owners asked me, one of the things they did ask me was about being a better person and being a better neighbor to people. And that's something that I think that I am now, much more so. So he doesn't answer the big press conference people. He answers a Spanish-speaking ESPN reporter. And I think it's a language barrier, and that it's more comfortable speaking Spanish to another Spanish-speaking person. And who wouldn't be comfortable speaking the same language to another person who understands you and can also speak that language back to you, instead of chatting, speaking Spanish to somebody who speaks English and Spanish. And it's just more comfortable to a person, and who wouldn't be? And those sentiments, they were echoed a bit later in an impromptu news conference with Epstein and the dugout. And what he said there, what Epstein said, I think there's a lot to be said that he was nervous and not speaking his native language and being translated. Look, I was on the call. Tom was on the call. Aroldis was on the call. And Barry Prever, his agent, was on the call. It happened, and it was real. We talked to him about the incident and made sure that statement reflected his real feelings on it, because that was important to us, and to hear directly from him. Tom laid out the exact same standards that he laid out to everyone in spring training. So, Epstein sort of cleared everything up for Chapman, cleared his name. He was nervous, and understandably nervous. And what Cubs manager Joe Maddon also suggested, that the message of Chapman's group news conference was lost in translation. He said, I think it shows that he may not have understood the question. You have to understand, this kid comes from Cuba, doesn't speak the language very well. It's easy to misunderstand. And again, that's all understandable. Maddon said that the incumbent closer Hector Rondon is okay with the club's acquisition of Chapman. His average velocity of 100 miles per hour is the highest in the majors. That, of course, is why the Cubs made the lightning rod deal in the first place, as the club tries to position itself for the franchise's first championship in 108 years. If that happens, it could well be Chapman on the mound, finishing off the historic accomplishment. Chapman said, I don't feel any pressure at all. I don't think that you have to put any pressure on yourself. I'm still the closer. I'm going to do the same job I always have. And I think that's a good response by Chapman. Whether it be in Cincinnati, whether it be in New York, whether it be in Chicago, he's going to be the closer that he's going to be. He's going to do the job that he's always done. And Chapman was available to pitch yesterday, but didn't even get the chance to warm up as the Cubs were shut out 3-0 by the crosstown White Sox. So maybe he'll pitch tonight against the White Sox. Maybe we'll see Chapman's debut with the Cubs. And just some MLB rumors coming out. The White Sox reportedly make starting pitcher James Shields available ahead of the trade deadline. So that's kind of interesting. Might Shields and Sale go in a package somewhere together? Wouldn't that be a big package and a big boost to whatever team acquires them? All right, so that is going to wrap up our show a little bit. So I'd like to thank you for tuning in. Again, I'm Benson Fechter. You can head over to our website at MLBinside.com anytime to get the lowdown on the show. So thank you for tuning in. I will see you Friday. Don't really know what time yet, but until then, head over to the website, MLBinside.com, and have a great Wednesday. I will try to do the same. Gotta stay.